We're back. Emery.
Yeah.
We got another treat for the Endless Thread listeners this week.
Yes.
I'm not sure if we would call it a treat. I mean, it is a treat.
It's a story you can really sink your teeth into, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Much like a treat that you would sink your teeth into.
Exactly like a treat.
Yeah.
So, this is the first episode of your new limited series, Beyond All Repair, which we are very excited for Endless Thread listeners to discover.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And, you know, Endless Thread listeners may have noticed that I'm here, then I'm over there.
Mysteriously missing a lot.
Yes, yes. And so you're going to hear episode one of the thing that I have poured a lot of time into. And you heard Getting Home last week, which is the episode of Endless Thread that this series kind of spins out of. And I hope you enjoy this story. I hope you connect with part of it. And
it is a fantastic story, and it's been very rewarding to watch you make it.
Thank you. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be able to do this. So so here's episode one. If you like what you hear, and I really hope you do, episode two is waiting for you in the Beyond All Repair feed. So just go find Beyond All Repair wherever you listen to Endless Thread, and that will be there for you. And here's the show.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
Heads up, this show has descriptions of violence and strong language.
Shane, you have no idea how much I'm trying to protect you, little brother. You don't know it yet, but you're being misled.
Mr. Shane, good morning, how you doing? Listen to me carefully. You're not ready for what will come down if you don't stop your nonsense and keep away.
If you guys attempt to sabotage or to trouble me in any which way or to try to slow down my life, I'm gonna fight you guys.
You don't know what you're playing with, okay?
I wanted nothing to do with it in the beginning, and up to now, I still want nothing to do with it.
Stop talking shit about me and don't lie on me.
But I'm not going to let anybody lie on me, okay?
Okay. You're worse than Judas. You're wicked.
All I'm doing is I'm giving you fair fucking warning. If you come at me, I'm going to destroy you, dude.
You're hearing an implosion of sorts, a family on the brink of a civil war, or maybe not so civil. This is the voicemail box of a guy named Shane. The two people leaving him messages, his older brother.
Keep me out of it.
And his dad.
Watch your mouth.
But Shane isn't receiving the worst of it, especially from his father. Shane's sister is.
You are the disease of this fucking family. You're devious, you're worthless.
That's from her voicemail collection. Here's another one.
Oh, you're so fucking illiterate, ignorant, and stupid. Give that to the reporter, too. You lie.
Give that to the reporter, too, the dad says. Hey, hi, hello. I'm the reporter. And I'm the reason for these intimidating voice messages. Part of it, anyway. They started after I called that brother and father days earlier.
Speaking?
My name is Amory Sievertson. I work for WBUR. It's a national public radio station.
Okay.
I have reopened a box, let's just say, that some members of this family were hoping would stay shut forever, while others are the reason it showed up on my doorstep 3 years ago. Inside are the details of something that ripped this family apart. A he said, she said between two siblings that left one of them a continent away and the other on the run.
Sister fighting against brother, try to lie to shut up your own brother. What kind of feelings you have, lady?
And despite the fact that this event happened more than 20 years ago, it's never been resolved. I'm talking about, oh wow, a murder.
Hey,
I'm Amory Sievertson from WBUR and ZSP Media. This is Beyond All Repair. Chapter 1, Boxes. Let's start with the younger brother receiving voicemail threats from his family, Shane Coraya. He's the reason I'm here.
Hi, Shane, I'm Amory. So nice to meet you.
Amory, welcome.
Thank you.
I first met Shane back in 2017. I'd gone to his New York City apartment to interview him for another podcast I make called Endless Thread. It was for an episode about his experience with homelessness. Shane spent a period of time in his teens sleeping on the subway. Nowhere else to go.
I was angry and pissed and sad. I only had until morning when school started for, like, some normalcy.
Back then, I didn't know much about the murder that affected Shane's life. But the way I see it now, Shane doesn't end up sleeping on the subway without that dark chapter. Shane was born in the Bronx, the youngest of four siblings, three boys and a girl with parents who were never not fighting. Name-calling, violence, an ugly divorce. It was a bad scene. So by his preteen years, Shane and his mom and sister had moved across the country to Washington State. They were all devout Jehovah's Witnesses.
1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be misled, bad association spoils useful habits. Still know my verse. couldn't shake that part.
Shane is not a Jehovah's Witness anymore, in large part because of something he was realizing about himself around this time.
I remember the night that I came out to my mom. She was in her room, and I, like, roll in the chair from my room and, like, put it in the doorway. And I'm like, so, Mom, I have something that I want to tell you. And I'm, like, trying to couch it as much as possible. And I tell her I'm attracted to men. And she looked at me, and she said, why is it my children become my worst fears?
Shane's mom mostly stopped talking to him. She'd leave food outside his bedroom door, as if he were in solitary or something. And then, right around this same time, came this.
Arrests made in woman's killing. Daughter-in-law accused in woman's killing.
The daughter-in-law accused is Shane's sister.
Woman pleads not guilty to murdering her mother-in-law. Slaying suspect has bail tripled. Woman's murder charge upgraded.
This murder was a big deal in a small Washington town, and word started spreading from newspaper headlines to gossiping teenagers at Shane's school.
I remember, like, going into the lunchroom and, like, this group of kids is, like, coming toward me, and the kid that I don't like is like, so is it true that your sister killed someone? And honestly, after that, I just kind of stopped going to school. I'd always been a really good student up to that point, and then I just kind of shut down.
Going to school felt impossible. Being at home with a mom who had barely talked to him felt impossible. So Shane flew back across the country by himself to the only other place he knew, New York.
So I slept on the train. Went to school, went to work, still got to earn that paycheck hourly.
Shane finished high school like this, unhoused. He worked part-time jobs to get by.
And, like, going to work in a rumpled suit because you have no place to put it, like, that was when I actually started to feel homeless.
Shane eventually pieced together enough of an income to rent a room in an apartment. He put himself through college, then law school. By the time I spoke to Shane for Endless Thread, he was working in the Bronx District Attorney's Office. The criminal justice system, to Shane, is something that's brought order to a chaotic life. It's dealt with things in a way he hasn't been able to, including his sister being accused of murdering her mother-in-law. Even when asked point blank back in 2017, do you think she did it?
I don't know. everyone's got a different story, and this is where I just kind of surrender to the justice system.
That's where we'd left things back then, as far as the murder was concerned. But the experience of hearing his larger story told by an outsider was pretty cathartic, Shane told me. He wrote to me after that episode came out, saying, "I feel a bit more unleashed from some stuff I didn't fully know was holding me back." And that was it. I thought. Time passed. Shane changed legal jobs, adopted a dog.
Tango! Oh, good boy. Yeah, I'll give you cuddles.
And then, about 3 years later, in the spring of 2021, I got an email from Shane out of the blue. There was someone else looking to be unleashed from something holding her back.
Look, I don't really know her story.
Something that's been boxed up, and for Shane at least, untouched for more than 20 years.
Do I think that my sister is capable of committing such a brutal crime?
Shane was reaching out to say that that question might finally get answered. Because the person who could settle it for him once and for all, she wanted to talk. And she wanted to talk to me. Coming up, Shane's sister.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Check, check. It's a couple weeks after Shane emailed me saying his sister wanted to, quote, speak openly about something that has caused a lot of pain in our collective lives. The murder of her mother-in-law. I'd seen pictures of Shane's sister in newspaper clippings from the early 2000s, handcuffed, wearing the stereotypical bright orange jail getup, no makeup. Her expression ranging from self-assured to resigned. I didn't know what to expect 20 years later. And the last I'd heard about it from Shane didn't put me at ease. And yet, when she appeared on my screen, I felt surprisingly calm.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay.
This is Sophia.
A little nervous, I won't lie.
Yeah, well, we're embarking on something new. I say that as if I knew what we were embarking on. But listening back to this, I want to warn my past self. Girl, you have no idea what's coming. Sophia didn't either.
Well, let's just see where it goes. Why not?
Sophia showed up to our first video call, looking nothing like the woman I'd seen in the newspapers. Her long jet black hair shiny and neat, her face impeccably made up. Winged eyeliner, red lipstick, meticulously shaped eyebrows, and an almost airbrushed appearance that defied everything I knew about her life at that point.
I wake up, I have usually several cups of coffee, and I'm watching the news.
She sounded so normal, sweet even.
I do a little bit of gardening, I listen to music.
She was talking to me from... Yeah, I can't say where she is. I can't say why I can't say either. Yet. I can say that contrary to her appearance, Sophia feels anything but put together.
The only thing I can do because I'm at my bottom is stand up for myself because I have zero expectations that anyone else can do it for me.
She feels held back from the life she had imagined for herself. A life that was really just starting 22 years ago, with a new husband of 4 months, new in-laws with whom she'd quickly become close. Then came January 10th, 2002. Sophia's mother-in-law, Marlene, was supposed to come over to her house for lunch that day. She didn't show. And when Sophia and her husband went over to Marlene's house to check on her, they found her lying on the basement floor. Marlene Johnson had been bludgeoned to death.
Did you know what happened to your mom?
She was murdered.
Okay, who murdered your mom?
I have no idea.
What makes you think she was murdered?
The hammer imprint on her forehead where there was teeth and eyeballs.
Okay, do you have any idea who might have done it?
Is there something that you typically do on this day?
This is a day I wish never existed.
It's now January 10th, 2022, 20 years to the day that Sophia's mother-in-law was murdered. Sophia's in her mid-40s at this point, but every year on this day, she says she's transported back.
I'm 23 years old, in my head, and this is 2002. And you know what I thought? I thought, it's January 10th. And whoever did this to her, do they know that it's January 10th?
Do they know? They're out there, somewhere. Then again, there are a lot of people who would say that the person who killed Marlene is talking to me right now.
I want to say and be very honest with you that if I did Marlene's murder, they wouldn't have to worry about finding me. I would turn myself in.
Sophia has always held fast that she did not kill her mother-in-law. But she also says there's a lot to this story that she's never told anyone until now. This is how she thinks about her life.
It is a house that has lots of boxes and lots of different rooms that need to be unpacked. And not necessarily sure where to start.
Okay, it's Monday, April 26th, 2021, and I got a box today. The day I started unpacking metaphorical boxes with Sophia, a physical one showed up at my office. Inside this box were VHS tapes. Sophia says that she's never watched them. She told me today that she does not want to watch them. She said that she's worried that, like, it'll put someone else's version of the story back in her head. And right now she just wants to focus on what she knows to be true about what happened. 13 tapes. In black and gold cardboard cases. Oh, this is a lot. It was like a time capsule, this box. Those white stickers along the long edges, handwriting labeling each one in blue and black pen. All right, let's see. So these tapes on the side, oh my God. It says State V. Johnson, Sophia.
We're ready for the jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Okay, LaVon, bring in the jury, please.
These tapes are the video footage of Sophia's murder trial. And they were really just the beginning. I didn't know what was in all of Sophia's boxes. I know now there's disownment, deportation, allegations of abuse, financial crimes, to start. The boxes of my own life look nothing like Sophia's. And yet, the more of hers I've opened, the more I've realized that they hold a lot of my greatest fears. being betrayed by someone who's supposed to be on my side, never being truly believed, loving something more than anything in the world, only to have it taken away.
My son turned 19 years old yesterday. Never met him. Don't know anything really about him.
Her son. When Sophia was accused of bludgeoning her mother-in-law to death, she was 6 months pregnant. She gave birth to her only child while incarcerated and hasn't seen him since.
And I do not want another one of his birthdays to go by without at least having an image of me and hearing the truth about what I'm sure he's read and heard about his entire life.
That's when I realized that Sophia is really trying to clear her name in the eyes of one person.
The only thing he will ever know is that I was accused. His grandmother is dead. This is my legacy. This is forever my legacy.
But maybe it doesn't have to be. Sophia can't start over, but she might still have time to change that legacy. Pretty early into reporting this story, someone told me that Sophia's life just seems so FUBAR. I wasn't familiar with this term, but it's a military acronym. Fucked up beyond all repair. Beyond all repair. That idea has stayed with me. Not as a statement, but a question. Is Sophia's life beyond all repair? And if she is, in fact, innocent of murder, will telling her story help change some people's minds about her? Starting, perhaps, with Shane.
Do I believe what she's saying, that she believes she's innocent? Like, I can believe that, but belief is very different from fact, you know? Like, someone still died.
If he believes, if anybody believes that I am that person, then I just don't know what that says.
That means that I'm not explaining it right, or he doesn't know enough. And I never want my son to ever think that. Mom, I love you anyway. That is not the right answer. That's not the right answer.
The right answer, to me, is just the truth. I've been upfront with Sophia about this from the very beginning.
I can't root for people in this story, but I can root for the truth. And if the people are aligned with the truth, then I'm rooting for the people, you know?
I agree with that.
It's been almost 3 years since my first conversation with Sophia. I've spoken to dozens of people connected to this story. I have thousands of pages of case files and court records. I have information. And now...
What the fuck?
Shane does too.
Oh, this hurts. This hurts. I can't read it.
20 years after this murder uprooted his life, Shane's decided he's not going to surrender to the justice system anymore. Because according to the justice system, this murder is technically a cold case.
This is not right. I don't care who it is.
Next time, Shane digs into his sister's case file, and I dig into Sophia's trial and the key witness who testified against her.
The person kind of took, it was like stalking off their face, and it turned out to be my sister.
Sophia's other brother.
I'm gonna fight you guys.
Beyond All Repair is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR, and ZSP Media.
It's written and reported by me, Amory Sievertson, and produced by Sophie Codner. Mix, sound design, and original scoring by Paul Vikas, production manager of WBUR Podcasts. Theme and credits music by me. Our managing producers are Sumita Joshi for WBUR and Liz Stiles of ZSP. The show is edited and executive produced by Ben Brock Johnson of WBUR and Zach Stewart Pontier of ZSP Media. If you have questions about the case, the real people at the center of this story, or anything else about this series, we want to hear them. Email beyondallrepairpod@gmail.com. Voice message, written message, you do you. beyondallrepairpod@gmail.com. And hey, do me a favor, will ya? Tell someone you love them and tell them about this show. In that order. Thank you for listening. If you made it all the way through the credits, hey, good on you. I love that. And also just a quick reminder that episode 2 of Beyond All Repair is waiting for you right now in the Beyond All Repair feed. So go get it. And thanks for listening.